Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. We're going to put a great spotlight on the Southwest for this next 30 minutes. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and I thank you for listening. And I also thank you for being a part of Mrs. Green's world. So today we're going to be finding out about an exciting new movement spreading throughout the country, all with the purpose of combating climate change, which, as you know, is very near and dear to my heart, and in fact, the very reason for Mrs. Green's world existence. But this is all about doing it in a very strategic way and an engaging way. But before I start the interview, let me do a quick shout out to the sponsor of this show, our friends at Siever Franks Architects. For over 30 years, Siever Franks Architects has demonstrated a strong commitment to innovative and timeless design solutions, regionally responsive architecture, and that really matters. It means they take the environment and their surroundings in a responsible way and being responsive, and adaptability to the needs and challenges of each individual project and client. In other words, they work with their clients, and I can attest to that. On a very personal note, Mike Franks has been a supporter of the Mrs. Green's World mission and vision from day one, and I can honestly say that without people like him believing in me and my dream, it is more than likely that Mrs. Green's world would not be here today, nor where we are today, and I don't say that lightly. Thank you, Mike Franks. Thank you, Siever Franks Architects. And to find out more about them, please visit their website at sieverfranks.com. Now please join me in welcoming my in-studio guest, Peter Dobrovolny, who will share with us some exciting information about Tucson emerging for good as it relates to creating a new model to addressing climate change. Peter is here representing Tucson's Emerging 2030 District, one of many such districts forming and evolving around the country. Peter, welcome, and it's great to have you here to share all about it.
Thank you. My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
I think it's going to be fun, and I am genuinely excited to be a part of this. So the best place to start is telling us, what is the Tucson Emerging 2030 District? Or even if you want to go before that, what is the whole 2030 concept?
Okay. The 2030 District is a model that's been growing across the country. And I worked, starting in 2000, I worked for the city of Seattle. I'm a planner and architect by original training. But I worked for the city of Seattle developing their green building programs. In 2009, a local architect came up with the idea of finding a way to decarbonize the city of Seattle. And we slowly began involving property owners and managers in our meetings for a number of months in early 2010. I knew Ed Masria, and we had decided to adopt a 2030 challenge for planning, which basically calls for a 50% reduction in energy use by the year 2030. So we adopted that as our model. We were inventing it as we went, but it started working. We actually got property owners and managers on board. They were improving their buildings or reducing their energy use and didn't go unnoticed. Other cities around the country saw what we were doing and thought, aha, we should do something like that. So we had our first summit in 2013. We had Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Los Angeles, who had formed 2030 districts. And since then, there are, besides Seattle, there are 13 other cities in the country and one in Canada, which are now established districts. It's a little more formal now. You go through three stages, prospective, emerging, and established. Tucson has now gotten far enough along that we are recognized
in the emerging category
as an emerging 2030 district, and we want to get to established by the end of this year. So that's sort of a quick background of what the 2030 districts are all about, and it's been a fun trip to participate in all the way along.
And it's when you say that the reduction in energy, is it energy, water, and transportation?
Energy, water, and transportation. The original 2030 challenge was directed at energy, but Ed Masria and Architecture 2030 added water use reduction and transportation emissions also, which is a great fit, particularly for somewhere like Tucson, where groups like the Watershed Management Group tell us we've got enough water in the city from what falls from the sky. We don't need all that stuff from the Colorado River. So there are a number of things we can do here to make ourselves much more water efficient, which will be very important as we go forward as the climate continues to change.
And for people that listen to this podcast, you know, I want to invite them to push rewind, because the importance of what you're saying. When I first heard, you know, a presentation by Watershed Management Group, when I know from the Tucson Water Department, who are a great client of ours and partner, that we almost went to stage two drought protocols, but we had such a great, you know, a lot of rain, so we don't have to. But I mean, read the paper. It is coming. I hesitate to say things like that now, but it is true. Climate change is upon us, people. So that to know that with interventions and water catchment areas and berms and we could change it just from the monsoons. So I think it's really important to know that this is not a pie in the sky. I mean, Watershed Management has the facts, and they've laid it out for businesses and homeowners.
You know, what's the biggest inspiration for me, and this is my second year in Tucson, and so far this year it's rained about maybe half an inch or something like that. But go out and look at the desert. It's green.
The Palo Verde. I know everything.
If we could learn to live like that and prosper with practically very little water, we could live for a long time.
I know. The desert really does speak, and it's yelling. I mean, you just drive along any of the roads here, and it literally takes your breath away, and the wildflowers this year. So in terms of the model, I'm very interested in, so you came here and decided, kind of build it and they will come. Where's your first step if you're going into a new city and you land? How did you target someone? Because it's really an exciting thing that's hit Tucson, which we'll talk about a little bit, but a real exciting thing that's turning into real measurable outcomes.
Well, actually, I didn't target it. They targeted me. Because I was very involved with the United States Green Building Council over a number of years, and in that process, along with developing the first 23 district, I got to know some people here in Tucson. David Eisenberg with DCAD is one of them. And he and others.
And he was taking the pictures the other night.
He and others invited me to make a presentation when I was considering moving to Tucson, which I did to Sustainable Tucson in December of 2013, certainly before I left the city of Seattle, just posing the idea, would this be a possibility? And when I got here, Michael Peel, who works for Pima Community College, very involved also with the USGBC, had a new program called Advance. I got invited to a meeting. I was one of four professionals. When I came, I didn't realize that each professional was supposed to have a project that the students were going to work with. So as I sat there realizing that, I thought, well, why not 2030 District? And that was sort of what got it off the ground. And at that point, I had met a few people, so I called a number of them up, convened a meeting in January of 2015, late January, to just pose the idea of, would you guys like to consider doing something like this? Let me tell you an interesting story. When we were in Seattle, 2010, we decided to start meeting every 2 weeks, just to get more stuff done. And we got near the end of the year, we were about ready to form a nonprofit organization, and Brian Geller, the architect whose inspiration initially was, said to the group, we're in good shape now. We probably don't need to meet every 2 weeks. Let's just meet once a month. Two property owners said, no way. We've got important work to do. We need to keep meeting every 2 weeks. So when I met with this group in January 2015, I said at the end, so would you guys like to get together like in a month or so? Well, three of them said, no way, 2 weeks. So that's what we started doing. We started meeting every 2 weeks, and it's a great way to keep people focused on where they're going. A monthly meeting, you sort of remember, you see it on your calendar, you show up, you see what's been going on. Every 2 weeks, you come prepared to jump in and do
something. It's so true. It's so true. It's front and center. That's a really important message for people if you want something to happen, the continuity, and fueling the excitement. And there is a lot of excitement around this.
And I think that's what's really helped us get going here in Tucson. The important part of a 2030 district really is getting property owners and managers involved. And we have a few, but we need a lot more. We've got a lot of, I am blown away by the enthusiasm and excitement of a lot of the people in the community who have environmental organizations of their own, and they've been working very hard on a variety of things, and we're sort of coalescing into a group. They say this may be an opportunity to actually for all of us to get together to work to solve the biggest problem we've got to face right now, which is climate change. And there are many things associated with that, but I've been, like I said, blown away by the enthusiasm from people in this community. It's a humbling experience, quite frankly.
I'm excited about that possibility, since you know that I walk in and out of a lot of worlds in the sustainability community. There is a common thread, and it is exciting. And I mean, I just think about Rita from Hotel Congress. Mm-hmm. I hooked you two guys up, and the rest is history. I mean, it was a green dot connection that took off on steroids, and she called me. She goes, I love this. I love everything about it. They have a big property. They have a big footprint, and they are full on. So that's the kind of thing that can come about. So did those partners back in the day, which is not that long ago, help you to start identify partners that would be then build the district? It's a very fluid definition.
Absolutely. The one advantage we have in Seattle, Seattle's been, it's a very progressive city in many ways, a very green city. And Seattle had passed, before we started the district, a disclosure ordinance which required all major building owners downtown to benchmark their buildings in Energy Star and share that information with the city. And as we started the district, for many of them, they found an onerous thing to do, but they thought, well, since we're doing this anyway, let's do something with it. And we'll share it with the district, and we'll start looking at seeing how buildings are doing, how my building compares to some others. And what would typically happen was we would show an owner how his building was doing and how it was doing with the 50% reduction target, and show him anonymously how it compared to some very similar buildings to his. And more often than not, there'd be one or two or three of them that were doing a lot better than his. So guess what he decided to do? I guess I better fix my building.
I'm going to up my ante
in this market.
Yes.
And it was very friendly competition. I mean, this was something that people enjoyed doing. And I think one of the things that led to districts forming elsewhere was that the building owners in Seattle said, this is great. We can compete with each other. But hey, let's compete with other cities. Let's show them that Seattle is a better place to come and do business and to live and all those kind of things. So, and other cities saw that as a possibility, and they're doing it for much the same reason. And the cities thoroughly enjoy competing with each other because they're sharing opportunities to improve the planet, quite frankly.
And you see other partners that are, when the first thing sometimes people reaction is, oh yeah, well that's going to cost a lot of money. With this model, if you do the things that, for, I'll use Hotel Congress as an example, shamelessly. They have done things with Tucson Electric Power. They have done things with the Tucson City of Tucson Water. They're reducing their food waste, which isn't a direct result of, you know, won't directly impact climate change. But they're saving money because of their energy efficiency, because of their water efficiency. So it can help a company's bottom line, and in some cases significantly. Is that correct?
It can, and that's interesting because one of the things that we're doing as a district is we're now week 13 of a class that we worked to put together with the Environmental Protection Agency. And I did a presentation last night on what we call a deep retrofit approach, which is something Rocky Mountain Institute came up with. And basically what that says, you know, the biggest problem with a building owner is you say, well, you could reduce your energy use by 50%, and it'll only, you know, you'll make improvements to buildings. It's only going to cost you $3 million. And you'll say, yeah, and so my tenants are going to get cheaper rent. Why would I do that? So what this process does is it takes a look at a lot of other costs associated in the building. So you begin to look at, you fix the building up, you can probably reduce your maintenance costs by quite a bit. You look at how your cleanup staff is doing. Maybe they could work in some buildings during the daytime, and we found out that the complaints go down dramatically when they're working in the building when the people who are working there are there. Improved building, insurance rates can go down, administrative costs can go down. So go through this whole exercise, and you can show a tremendous improvement in rate of return for the building owner. He can advertise his building, competing with other buildings, saying, I've got a greener building than the rest of those. And many tenants, quite frankly, are looking for that. They want a healthy working environment where their staff will be there during the day. They won't be going home sick because it's a terrible place to work in. They're happier because it's a nice, productive environment to be in. So not only does it improve the bottom line, but you can turn that around, it improves the market value of the building. So a building that's improved, and owners are often thinking in a two-year time frame, you know, I may be ready to sell it in 2 years. So these improvements can put it to the point where it's worth a lot more than what they paid for it originally. And if they want to, they can sell it, or they can keep it and still have a great rate of return. So the bottom line, triple bottom line kind of stuff, actually, is extremely important. The case we need to make to building owners so they can see beyond just the, oh, it's going to cost me a bunch of money to fix the building up.
And when you have people, like, in terms of targets, I know that to some extent, you know, like in our downtown, as with many downtowns, a lot of the buildings are government buildings.
Right.
It just, that's the way it happens. So where is the county and the city in terms of, I know it's more complicated than a private private owner. I mean, you know, Hotel Congress, Todd said yes, and like we're off.
Yeah.
But how has that evolved, and where are you in terms of that emergence?
We've had some participation early on over the last year and a half from some of the county staff, particularly those working in sustainability areas, a little bit from the city. The city staff is just overworked at this point, doesn't have much time. But we need to really meet with the elected officials and show them that what we're doing fits in with many of their own sustainability missions going forward, and that working together we can actually accomplish more than working independently. We had just last week, we had a meeting with Mayor Rothschild. He was very enthusiastic about this. He's got a new sustainability director, Jamie Galeta, who's going to start joining us in meetings now. So we're off to
She's awesome. I mean, that'll be a good move. Yeah.
We need to keep working on the county, because you're right. They own a lot of buildings in the downtown area, and public buildings can be used very effectively for making case studies. We can benchmark buildings, sure. They can make improvements that can become, because they're more willing to do it than some private owners would be, can become a good example to others of what they can do to improve their buildings, too. So,
and it's really great for listeners to know they can be an advocate. It's always, I like the call to action. And it's something, there are people that attend city council meetings. There are people that know their elected officials. And to ask them and become advocates for the 2030 district, they can go to your website and find out a lot of information, which I will do a shout out for at the end of the show.
Good. Okay. Yeah.
What about, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, like TEP, their building is so sustainable. They have water, you know, they have enough water for probably the city for a couple of months for their rainwater harvesting they do below their building. And every energy efficiency was considered, you know, they have LEED certification. Can they help?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of my biggest challenges, I'm a newcomer to Tucson. When I worked in Seattle, I'd been there for a number of years, and I had worked with the development community, so I knew that part of the community really well. I don't here, so I'm relying on other people, and we're still trying to find the right contacts at TEP. We thought we had a couple of them coming to our event at the Hotel Congress last Thursday night. I guess they didn't show up, but
they did.
Did they? Okay.
They were there, and Dan Hogan spoke. And
I missed that.
I was
the first speaker, and as soon as I got done with Eugene, I went in line to get a drink, so I missed the next few speakers. So.
And I never got my Bloody Mary. I'm still depressed about that. Rita was teasing me. I'm saying, I want a Bloody Mary. Oh, it was funny. But they were there, and they did speak, and I have a follow-up call with Dan, and I'm a good person to help with that dot connection. I'll see what I can do.
I think they could be a tremendous asset. Like I said, I think we just haven't found the right people yet. It's a good utility, and I know from experience it's a publicly owned utility. But Seattle City Light, who I worked for my first 5 years working for the city, was a very aggressive electric utility helping the city become as close as they could carbon neutral in their generation and use of energy. So, and I know the TEP in many regards in the same direction. They've got a very strong plan for renewables and whatnot. So I think they would be a good ally. We just need to find the right people to talk to make the case that we're both on the same page.
And I'm committing to this on air for thousands of people to hear it. I'm going to help make that happen.
Good.
They're a really great partner of Mrs. Green's world. And you're right, they are committed.
Yeah.
You know, Dave Hutchins, their leader, he's more than, you know, the CEO. Their leader is inspirational in what he wants to do and what he is doing. They're doing a lot of really wonderful things.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if there's even an answer to this, but I remember, you know, I'd say John Isley and I are old yeller dogs, and we've been doing this a long time. He's been doing it longer than I have, but, you know, he was one of the first people I met on the beginning of my journey for Mrs. Green, and he called me about this, and he said, Gina, I really think this is something you should take a look at. And I'm like, you know, John, there's so many things, and there's this, and there's that, and there's the food people, and the same, nah, nah, nah. And he goes, no, I really think you should take a look at this. And when he said that, I did. I mean, he really got my attention. What is that? He was right. And you know that. I have been excited and I have been engaged. There's an excitement. The event that we had last week, you don't always see that. I mean, I've been in Tucson right. for 40-some years where there's a sellout and people were emailing me who had no decision-making power whatsoever. Can you get me tickets? And I tried to get in. And this is 2 or 3 days before. So there was definitely something different about, like, I want what she's having kind of thing. And so what do you think it is that's created that not just excitement, but what I see the beginning of a really strategic and important coalescence for Tucson?
You know, and this is a word I tell myself I need to use more often. It's magic.
I just got goosebumps. That's great. What is it?
You
it's
know,
magic.
In Seattle, and we're doing it here too, in Seattle, Brian and I working together, would run into these insurmountable problems. And we start banging our heads against the wall. And all of a sudden, one of the people working with us would walk in the door and say, had you thought of so-and-so? Oh, there's the answer. Thank you so much. And I think the magic comes is when you're breaking new ground. Not every step is going in the right direction, but most of them tend to go in the right direction because of the commitment you've got to finding something that you want to in the future. And it's magic that gets you there, quite frankly.
And I think part of it is that you do meet every 2 weeks, so the momentum keeps right. going. And then having a class, that class got filled. That says something about where people are and where the market is in terms of being ready for this. Yeah. In Tucson, there are so many wonderful players and important players on the scene.
Let me just add one more thing here, Gina. Right before the event, we had a planning meeting, and somebody said, has anybody contacted the newspaper? And so Barbara Warren reached out. She knew somebody named Tony Davis. And
right.
About 3 hours after that meeting, he called me up, and he said, you know, I can't come to your meeting. I've got this workshop training thing I need to go to. I won't be back till the 27th. But he said, I am so impressed with what you're doing there. This seems to be what Tucson needs if Tucson wants to save itself. When I get back on the 27th, I'm going to call you up and I want to find out more about it. So he's obviously seeing the same kind of thing happening, the enthusiasm building. And I think, you know, I don't want to put words in other people's mouths, but I think many people have, as you sort of described, have been struggling for, in their own area, struggling for a long time, trying to make a difference in Tucson and the planet, for that matter, and see that maybe this is the pathway to do that. And the thing that really makes it work is it's not a small group. It takes everybody moving in the same direction.
And the people that were there and that were represented and putting an event like that and lining up the speakers and who had tables and the enthusiasm of organizations like Local First, which right. is another really exciting yeah. thing that's happening here. But it's I'm still looking for that leadership coalescence that puts us on the map big time, because the effects of it, the ripple effects to me are endless. And even in terms of tourism, more and more people, we get people here because it's a biking city
right.
and, you know, the beat goes on. What about, and I don't want to, you know, no big dead elephants in the middle of the room. This is not Stump Peter, but what about, I would think that the University of Arizona at some point, it's a big monster with lots of buildings. What's your penetration success with that? And how do you, I mean, that's a big monster with lots of decision makers and...
It's a big complex political organization. We've had participation from a number of people, Courtney Crossman, who runs their downtown office, Ben Champion,
Ben has been involved.
Director, Gary Pivo, who's a professor there. I met Gary at a Pima County event, and he invited me to come out and tell one of his lecture classes about the 2030 district. Sandra Bernal, who's a grad doctoral student there, who's been very active in our group. It's a lot of loose pieces, and I think we need to find a way to pull it together. The problem is that the people who want to become active in this kind of thing are already overloaded, and it's often difficult to get their attention and focus. You know, I tried via email to invite Gary to be a speaker at our event last Thursday and never got a response back because he probably never got around to looking at his email or had time to respond or had time to come to the meeting. So I think we've got many of the right people, and we continue to work on it. We're working with some of the Sandra's working with some of the students to basically put together what all the building types are, the square footage, their energy use, so we can come up with a baseline for the University of Arizona. And we can say, this is what your baseline is if you were to reduce energy use across the district. And keep in mind, these measurements are made from what are called national medians, not where a building is right now.
Right.
So the ENR2 building is probably a very good performer, doesn't need to do much more, if anything, but some buildings will have to do that. So we can put together a baseline for the Arizona U of A campus and say, this is where you need to get by 2030, and here's how we can work together to make it happen.
And we would be on a trajectory from emerging to a fully fledged district. But and I think the Marshall Foundation, I think when we meet with Jane from the Marshall Foundation, that will move forward. I know she's been slammed, but there are strategic partnerships that we just keep chipping away at it. And that's what I love. Even for me, there's a way for me to contribute without making the time commitment to go to meetings every other week. But I stay
fine.
In touch. And that's what you said to me when we met with when I met with you months ago. It's like these strategic partnerships, everybody can contribute in the way that their skill set or their strategic possibilities are. And I think that my last question is, because I want to make sure I give the Facebook page and ways to people find us, is yeah, I wish we were on TV sometimes. Peter just looked at his watch, and it's like, this time goes fast. It goes by. Okay, I have to have this big clock in front of me because it's like, okay, I still have more questions, and what can I get in that's it's the end of the magic. But what about the metrics? I call them metrics or the baselines. Who measures those? Do you go in and meet with a building and say, here's... Like, you take their temperature. Is that ever scientific on my part? How do you do it to get to
for energy, yes. And we use Energy Star as the baseline to use. So there's a good, very robust database of buildings across the country. So we know what average use is, and we can benchmark a building and say, here's the amount of energy you're using. Here's how it compares to what the national median is. Here's how far you'd have to go to reach that 50% reduction. Water and transportation, we have got a metrics task force in the group, and we need to develop those metrics ourselves. Basically, for water, it says 50% reduction, but we need to take a look at all the aspects of the water environment here in Tucson. And transportation even gets to be more complex, but it's something we're continuing to work on, so we need to come up with baselines to measure against so we know whether that we are getting somewhere with what we're doing.
Okay, and I love everything about it. And people, you're listening out there and you might be thinking, what can I do? You can go to their Facebook page. It's Tucson 2030 District. There's another bigger Facebook page that's 2030 Districts on Facebook. Twitter, there's a 2030 Districts Twitter. And their website is 2030districts.org, and it's very easy to find Tucson. On the left, it's the districts. On right below that, it's emerging districts. I didn't go any farther. I didn't know about that third category, wannabe districts. But it's a way. It might be a building owner. It might be you work downtown. There's always something that you can do to get engaged in the conversation, because as Peter said, there's nothing more important. The biggest threat facing us as a population, a global population, is climate change, and let's get involved in the business of combating that. So, Peter, thank you. It was delightful. I'm as excited as ever. I will continue to step up and do what I can. And everybody, our May 23rd show is with Marilyn Monahan and Shelley Clay of the Apparent Project from Haiti. I hope I don't cry on the show, but it's that good, about ending poverty. And on May 25th, What Lies Within with Gary Gibson and Tim Sibley of Russet Southwest. You may be surprised at what's lurking in your air duct and behind your bedroom walls. Please plan to be with us. Make it a great green day, and thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.